This week, or this year, the Jewish calendar and the Christian calendar are the same. So this week, we did everything wrong as always, but this we celebrated Passover on Saturday, but the first day of Passover, Passover starts at sunset this Thursday. And so, and then Easter is celebrated on Sunday, and he was crucified. It gets confusing because of the different use of when day starts. But so this year, probably I think it happens 3 out of every 21 years. The Christian calendar and the Jewish calendar meet. And I thought that was interesting too. But remember, we talked a great deal about where he held his Passover, and that it was, I believe, and the historians that I trust believe, that it was in Mark's house. And Mark's parents were very wealthy. Mark was 8 or 9 years old at this time. And there's a great indication that this is what would have happened. Judas waited until they dipped the sop, they dipped the parsley or whatever it was twice, and then he left. And he went to get the temple guard. And they had to wait until they did their Passover, so when they finished the Passover for the temple guard, and Judas, he knew that they were at Mark's house, so that's where he brought them. But Jesus had decided to finish the rest of the Haggadah when they began to sing the Psalms of Ascent, the Psalms of the Hallel in the Garden of Gethsemane, and that was a place that he normally went, so Judas figured that he went there. So Mark is asleep, more than likely, young kid, and he's been kind of curious about all this stuff. And now he hears this huge commotion because the temple guards have come and raided his house. And so he watches what happens, and then he sees that they start to leave. And so now let's see if we can prove this in some way, okay? In verse 43 of Mark 14, "And immediately while he yet spake, cometh Judas, one of the 12, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves, or lances, from the chief priest and the scribes and the elders. And he that betrayed him had given them a token, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, the same is he. Take him and lead him away safely. And as soon as he was come, he goeth straightway to him, and saith, Master, Master, and kissed him. And they laid their hands on him, and took him. And one of them stood by drew a sword, and smote a servant of the high priest, and cut off his ear. And Jesus answered and said unto them, Are you come out as against a thief, with swords and with staves, to take me? I was daily with you in the temple, teaching, and you took me not. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. And they all forsook him and fled. And then here's the kicker. And there followed him a certain young man, having a linen cloth cast about his naked body. And the young men laid hold on him, or the guards grabbed him, tried to arrest him. And he left the linen cloth and fled from them naked." So that, again, Mark could have easily talked about, well, man, this is what happened to me when I was doing this. I was there. But instead, his humility made him say a certain young man. It's the only way he would have known about it. You understand? Yeah. Now let's look at the same thing in Luke. Luke was a convert from, he was a Gentile. Nobody really knows. But at least we know that he was a doctor when he was from Alexandria. Not from Alexandria. Yeah. He was a Greek anyway. So let's go to Luke 24. Remember in John 12 where it says, and certain Greeks wanted, said we would see Jesus, and then Jesus wouldn't talk to them and all that, you remember? I think it was Mark. But anyway, in verse 24, chapter 24, verse 13. Well, we got time. Josanne isn't here. chapter 24, verse 1. Now upon the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came unto the sepulchre, bringing the spices which they had prepared, and certain others with them. And they found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre. Remember, the Jews knew about this third day resurrection thing. And so that's why they rolled this huge stone, and then the Romans posted guards there because they heard that they thought somebody was going to try to come and steal the body and claim he was resurrected, right? So they had Roman guards, and they had this huge stone that one person couldn't move that was rolled over against the cave in which he was buried. Where are we? And they found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre, and they entered in and found not the body of the Lord Jesus. And it came to pass, as they were much perplexed thereabout, behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. And as they were afraid, and bowed down their faces to the earth, and they said unto them, why seek you the living among the dead? He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again. And they remembered his words, and they returned from the sepulchre and told all these things unto the 11 and to all the rest. And it was Mary Magdalene and Jonah and Mary, the mother of James, and other women that were with them, which told these things unto the apostles. And their words seemed to them as idle tales, and they believed them not. Then arose Peter and ran unto the sepulchre, and stooping down, he beheld the linen clothes laid by themselves, and departed, wondering in himself at that which was come to pass. Now this is on the road to Emmaus then. Now, we know who these two were that are on the road to Emmaus. Remember, I told you about the Sanhedrin had to, because this was the Jubilee year, they had to expand what a Sabbath day's journey is out of Jerusalem. And so Emmaus was, however long it says it is, away from Jerusalem. And then listen. And behold, two of them went that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was from Jerusalem about 300 furlongs. And they talked together of all these things which had come to pass. And it came to pass, while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were holden that they should not know him. Now, we'll see that there were at least three, and maybe probably many more times that Jesus appeared to the disciples and he didn't recognize them. This is one of the most fascinating conceptual things that you can possibly ever dream of. But this isn't the time for that. Their eyes were holden that they should not know him. And he said unto them, what manner of communications are these that you have one to another as you walk and are sad? Now tell me he didn't like humor. And one of them, whose name was Cleophas. Now we have to know who the other one was. The other one had to be Luke. In the same way, and if we were writing it, we'd say, man, and when I was on the road to Emmaus with Cleophas, Jesus appeared unto me. Just as Mark, when I was that Passover night, I was that little kid that they grabbed my... You're starting to see that maybe the loss of the I motive might be something that's endemic to what it means to be born again. Anybody have any thoughts on all this right now? We haven't said anything yet. I'm just giving you some background. What? Oh, you, no, you. The I'm offerer.
I'm weird. Can't piss him off.
Huh?
Can't piss him off.
You want to bet? All right. No, I wouldn't do that. What manner of communications are these that you have one to another as you walk and are sad? And one of them, whose name was Cleophas, answering, said unto him, Art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem? Hast not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? And he said unto them, What things? Now, this is big time. This is humor. This is satire. This is like the camel passing through an eye of a needle. The largest unclean animal on earth passing through the eye of a needle. I mean, and he said unto them, What things? And he said unto him, Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet, mighty indeed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and have crucified him. But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. And beside all this, today is the third day since these things were done.
That whole speech to me is incredible. As he says, he was a mighty prophet. He doesn't say he's the Son of God. He says the chief priest delivered him, not we delivered him. Every single one of them denied him. And then finally he says, and it's beyond the time.
No, it's, I mean, this is the beginning of Christian dispensationalism. Christ ended dispensationalism when he told the thief that today you will be with me in paradise. But here's the first example of Christian dispensationalism. What?
Bring it back.
Yeah. Where are you, Gary?
Oh, I'm...
Are you going to come back to us, or...
We'll keep going here. I'm just kind of working it here.
He's still waking up.
No, he's not. He's doing what he always does.
Meditating.
Right. returning to your own private Idaho. All right.
That place you always wanted to visit.
Yeah, before you die. Think of that. That has a staggering implications.
Staggering.
All right. Now they're talking to Jesus. And they're telling him what should have happened. Does this sound like any of you? Anybody had a dream last night? They want to visit their favorite place before they die? It's time to do it right now, this instant. But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. We trusted that it should have been he who should have fixed me. We trusted that it should have been he who had solved all my problems. We trusted that it should have been he who should make me nice. We trusted that it should have been he who gave me a brain, who wanted to give me a heart, to whatever all that other stuff, to give me a voice. I got to pick on everybody.
He was going to redeem us.
Whatever your definition of redemption is, do you understand that? Every man on the face of the earth has his own idea of what redemption is, and he works it daily.
But it's always about the world. It's not about spirits.
Well, you can put the spirit on it. All right. Yea, and besides that, certain women also of our company made us astonished, which were early at the sepulcher, and they found not his body. And they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels, which said he was alive. And certain of them which were with us went to the sepulchre and found it even as so as the women had said, but him they saw not. And then said Jesus unto them, O fools, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. He's saying the same thing to us. It's not just the prophets, it's the law, the prophets, and the writings. Why are we so slow to believe all that the scriptures have spoken? Because we have to finish something before we die. There's something left. We have an agenda left before we accept our death. Something has to be fixed. Something has to be done. Then I'll believe. Some fear has to be dealt with. I have to see that some sin has been covered. I have to see something. Some other thing in my head has to take place before I die. Before I accept my death. Now they're all...
Okay, Jesus, what he did wasn't enough. I have still something to do
today. Tell me about it. I mean, I promise you, all of the things that you think you want to do or must do, or normally they're all really good things. Mine used to be, my mantra was, all these women, so little time. I mean, it was just that was the only thing I thought was valuable. What's yours? What's got to happen before you die? Not before you die. That's not saying it correctly. That's what's going to happen before you accept that you have already died 2,000 years ago. What's it going to take? 30 more celebrations of Passover? 10,000 more morning Bible studies? I know. It's when all my kids are grown and okay. Then it'll be safe. I know, and on and on and on. And it's usually something I know when God fixes me about this issue or about that issue. When I'm no longer subject to my thoughts. When I'm no longer subject to my emotions. When I'm no longer subject to my fears. But can you see you're the one that's keeping those fears and emotions alive? You're the one that has something to do or something must take place before you accept your death. Can you see that at some seminal place, at some indivisible place?
For the last long time, when you would say, you know, even if your questions are to understand God, you know, I was always wondering where you were coming from when you put that emphasis on that. Like, even if you have these spiritual goals, but in the last few days, it's like very obvious that when you even those kind of goals, maybe especially those kind of goals, you know, you're giving yourself this time before you die.
Right.
Like you said today.
And beginning at Moses, and that's beginning at the law, in verse 27, beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. In other words, he showed, and he'd been doing it for 3 years, so it didn't take that much effort then, and he'd been with them night and day. He'd been showing through this 3-year cycle of readings how he was the fulfillment of all the law, of all the prophets, of all the writings, of all of time. He was the reason time and space existed. Bring everything to that vanishing point. And you'll never again make a mistake in theology. And put no confidence in anything about you. Not even in your wants and needs and little peccadilloes. And your little problems and issues. Not in any, no personality issues. And here's the kicker. And they drew nigh unto the village whither they went. And he made as though he would have gone further. And he is always doing that. No matter what it is. That's why the night of the last day has lasted 2,000 years. Because he's always as if he's going somewhere else. You gotta hear this. And the reason he's as if he's going somewhere else is because you haven't accepted the end. And so therefore he has to go somewhere else.
It's his humility.
It's his humility, exactly.
He would never presume to join you.
Amen. No matter what it is, no matter how righteous it sounds, no matter how sincere you are, if you don't see now is the end, he will have made as though he will go further. If this is the only thing you understand from all your years here, this will make everything worthwhile if you can see it and live it. Because his humility cannot occupy where you are. So as long as there is something left to do or something left to take care of or anything, something left to be fixed, then he can't fully occupy the temple because you're there. And he's not doing it because he hates you, he's doing it because of this massive humility of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Now, is there any agenda that you have that would make him go as though he would have gone further? If you can say no, then listen. But they constrained him, saying, "Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent." And he went in to tarry with them. And it came to pass, as he sat at meat with them, he took the bread, and he blessed it, and brake it, and gave to them. And their eyes were opened, and they knew him. And he vanished out of their sight. Hallelujah. This is the entire walk of a believer in three verses. Can you see the sickening issue of sincerity and self-justification and really trying? Is there anybody that doesn't understand this?
Well, this part right here, why did they suddenly see him? Why did he vanish?
Because they no longer, he vanished, he was now their life. For me to live as Christ, to die as gain. No, you don't need. He is everything. He is all and in all. There's no place he isn't. And they said one to another. And this Luke's description. Luke's writing of the gospel, you know, is so much more accurate, so much more complete. Luke was an educated physician. And then he traveled. He was Paul's assistant because Paul was so screwed up physically that he had to have a doctor travel with him. And then finally, at a point when all these idiot stories and made-up crap about Christ were starting, then he was commissioned by this guy. What's his name?
Yeah.
Theophilus. Go to Luke. It's in Luke 1, whatever that is. If it's not Luke, and the thing that you have to recognize is Luke and the book of Acts are both were one book at one time. You understand that? Okay, Luke chapter 1, verse 1. For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us, even as they deliver them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, it seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all these things from the very first, to write unto thee in order, most excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of those things which thou hast been instructed. So he wrote, he sat down with every possible eyewitness, and sat down and recorded exactly the things. And we got all this other crap that's coming up now. I mean, we got the Nag Hammadi Library and the Dead Sea Scrolls and now the Gospel of Judas. And those things were written 200 years later. And they were just goofy. It's just like all the denominations. There's some truth in them, but it's, you know, they're mostly a way to have to justify an individual's own interpretation of something. So we got the Acts of Peter and the Gospel of Mary, and they're endless. I think there's like 53 of them that I've got over there. And don't ask me to borrow them because I'm not going to let you. Go down to do what I did. Go find them. What?
I'm just remembering this one called I think it's a short story or a novella called The Canticle for Leibowitz, and it's about just this group of people several hundred years in the future, and their religion is built on a sacred writing that at the end of the story, when you find out what it was a shopping list that Mrs. Leibowitz gave her husband on the day that the bombs fell.
And they said one to another, did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us by the way and while he opened to us the scripture? And they rose the same hour and returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 gathered together and them that were with them, saying, The Lord is risen indeed and hath appeared to Simon. And they told what things were done in the way and how he was known of them in the breaking of the bread. That doesn't mean he's known. I mean, it has something to do with eating, but we'll have to figure out what that means. It's really, that's a whole other, we don't have time for that. But in there's something about that statement, he was known unto them in the breaking of the bread, that touches you at a deep place.
Well, we celebrated the Passover, but he took the bread and said, this is my body.
Well, I know, but I'm saying to you that it's much deeper. It's the Passover is every time you take anything to drink, you're drinking that which his blood. And anytime you have anything to eat, you're eating that which to recognize that only he gives you sustenance and satisfaction. So it's a cosmic thing. Anybody have any response? Any questions?
I always thought when he broke the bread that it revealed the wounds.
Among many other things, but yeah. Everybody has perfect understanding.
I've been going, just not intentionally, but I've been going long periods of without food and eating a lot less and just strange stuff. And become real aware of my body chemistry and about how it's unbelievable. Like it's the end of the world and totally depressed and everything's just horrible because I've sunk down so low and go eat a cracker and 2 minutes, 3 minutes later, you know, I'm ready to sing a song and tap dance. But the, what you said about your well-being and I mean, I'm becoming aware of this. What you eat is your sense of everything. It's crucial.
Remember the scriptures say you cannot eat at the table of the Lord and the table of demons. And if you're eating at the same table as the Gentiles, you're eating at the table of demons. And he's not talking about whether or not you're sitting there having a steak with a friend or anything else. It's or for our vegetarian friends, an avocado. What? See, there goes John's. And John has taken over the ministry of Betty. You know what the ministry of Betty is? Now it's been passed to John.
The mantle has been passed.
Anyway, the reason you were created, the reason we were created like we were, so that I've said this so often, but nobody ever really gets it. He could have made us like that tree. So all we had to do was hang around. And we would have been sustained by sunlight and rain and the nourishment from the soil. But he made us like we are. We have to eat. And then we can go a long time without eating. But how long can you go without liquid? Mostly about 3 days.
Things have to die for us to eat.
And the whole idea of it is so that you can understand that the very functions of your body reveal him and reveal the mystery of God. Whether it's eating, or that's why he says nothing from without that entering into the can defile. The only thing that defiles is that which is already in your heart. And if you don't know that by now, then you're silly. Stop and think. You know yourself well enough. If you have any integrity, you know that you commit every kind of crime constantly in your mind. Well, all he's saying is you're not going to get any better, but you're going to stop giving any importance to the beast when you begin to see the mystery of Christ in his crucifixion in the very natural things that you do, and that you're just being is the gospel. If you have eyes to see, that's why debt is so evil. The idea that we would, it just makes dependence on God. Or I want things to be different. Or I got places to go. Or I got things to do. Yeah. So I've said for 30 years, if you've got something to do, go do it quickly. Don't sit there and pine for the fjords. Take a big guy. I'm tired of talking.